Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. It's Brian Windhorst in the Hoop Collective, although Brian is on vacation this week.
You forgot we talk about the NBA.
I'm your host, Andrew Hahn. Joining me from parts unknown, Washington, Kevin Pelton.
I mean, we're all in Las Vegas now, but yeah.
Originally. coming out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Dave McMenamin.
Western suburbs, Philly. Yep, glad to be here.
Kirk, I have no idea where you're from.
I grew up on the main streets of State College, Pennsylvania, but now I live in Austin, Texas.
Kirk Goldsberry. And from a farm in New York, I want to say.
That's correct.
Tim Bontemps.
Hello, Andrew.
Well, now that we got that introduction out of the way. The funny thing is, actually, you're usually jumping in here to say rate, subscribe, review, or the name of the podcast.
Yeah, you're really filling in with Brian's space that he doesn't do that.
Yeah.
All the way around.
So the buzz in the NBA now, in the wake of the Kawhi Leonard decision and the Paul George trade, is it's always the focus on what's next. And what's next has now become is kind of first reported by Woj and with an assist from Royce Young, the possibility of a Russell Westbrook trade and Oklahoma City working with his representatives. I'm curious what you guys are hearing, because it seems like the consensus is this might move pretty quickly.
Well, Tim McMahon furthered the story, advanced the story this afternoon, and is attacking the Houston Rockets angle. And, you know, we know that the Rockets put just about everybody other than James Harden on the market trying to move them. Earlier, they tried to get into the Jimmy Butler sweepstakes, and now, you know, is he the right fit? When you're talking about a volatile locker room, I'm not so sure, but if Daryl Morey is intent on shaking that locker room up in some capacity, I imagine they're going to have feelers out.
Yeah, and I've heard other teams are considering how they can get it. I mean, it's not every day that an MVP in their prime is available for a trade.
Is he any prime?
Debatable analytically, but in a traditional sense, I would say he's right in this prime, but we can talk about
that later. It wasn't that long ago he won MVP.
Regardless, I would say teams are actively trying to figure out if they're interested in how they would achieve this, but it will move fast, in my opinion.
Like, I covered the game against the Lakers this year where he wanted to get 20-20-20 and did it. So, like, that's in your prime. Like, not many people can do that.
That's a good point.
The bigger issue is that he's got an enormous contract. He's got a knee that's an issue, and he's got a personality that can be an issue. And I think that combination makes him a very difficult guy to trade, and it makes it, despite his talent, which I think everybody would agree, he has a lot of talent, it's going to make it interesting to see where he winds up, and I think it makes for a rather select group of teams that make logical sense to try to acquire him.
But we still think that the Thunder are going to get value for him, right? I mean, you know,
I'm not really sure about that.
Interesting. I mean, that was a conversation I had with my editor go behind the scenes after I wrote about Westbrook on Saturday. Is like, you know, should we make it more clear that he really should have negative trade value because of the size of his contract and the fact that, you know, whether he's close to his prime or not, he's on the wrong side of his prime and continuing decline is that salary gets bigger and bigger over the next four seasons. But I tend to think that they will get positive value for him. Kirk's nodding his head, so I take it you agree.
No, I do agree. I mean, I think this is a league where superstars win championships, and like I just said earlier, there's not many times you have a chance to get a player like this on your team. So everybody's taking it seriously. Those conversations are happening. Analytically, he's not a great value, and you pointed it out, this contract is what you're talking about more than the enigmatic player, this monster contract. Who can absorb it? Who wants to deal with it for the next few years? Because it is a major, major cost.
I guess I should clarify, when I say value, I guess what I mean is I think they'll get some value for him. I just don't think it's going to be like, you know, three first. I don't think it's going to be like the trade that anything close to the trade Oklahoma City just made where they got like a preponderance of value, right? Like maybe they get a couple interesting players and some short salary that goes away. Maybe they get a pick. I just don't think it's going to be like, you know, this overwhelming haul where like teams are going to be lining up to try to get him.
Dave brought up Tim McMahon at the start of this topic. I just wanted to ask, because McMahon often talks about Chris Paul and his terrible contract. Which player would you rather have right now if you're trying to acquire a point guard? Chris Paul in his contract or Russell Westbrook in his contract? Dave.
I'd probably rather have Chris Paul. I don't think he's as good as Russell Westbrook. I think he can shoot better than Russell Westbrook can, though. And I think that'll age better.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, but I would take Westbrook just because of the age. I think Chris Paul's contract is very dangerous just because he could age out real fast. But yeah, I think Westbrook, still has a chance if he can start sort of playing a more analytically friendly game. If he can change a couple of his habits, I still love the player and the talent.
I don't bet on that happening. I would say Chris Paul only because his contract's a year shorter. I would not want either of those deals, but at least you get out of Chris's sooner. You could trade it sooner as an expiring deal. So I would just say him. But I either one of those situations are, you know, problematic on a variety of levels.
I'm Westbrook because of age and then also durability. I mean, while there is the concern about his knees, he hasn't missed much time, you know, since he had that lost season basically due to multiple knee procedures, whereas Paul, it's a recurring hamstring and, you know, you wonder how often is he ever going to be fully healthy at this stage of his career. But I think this discussion we just had illustrates why a Westbrook-Chris Paul trade isn't going to happen right. Because both of those teams are going to think they're giving up the better player in that trade.
The point of this topic is, like, I think Bontemps said earlier that there are a select few teams that can even facilitate this kind of trade. So, merging Dave's point and Tim's point, like, who are the teams that would even make sense for these kinds of trades to happen?
Well, the reason everybody keeps thinking Miami is where he's going to wind up is because Miami is really the only team that, to me, logically makes sense to make a Westbrook trade. Now, there are issues that have to be resolved, including Miami being hard-capped and Oklahoma City needing to shed money to realistically trade Westbrook because, again, probably the goal for them is going to be to lessen their luxury tax burden and maybe get a young piece. Like, this isn't – they're not necessarily going into this, I think, thinking they're going to get a huge haul back. You know, and they just did get Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to be their point guard of the future in the other trade. Like, the fact the other trade brought back so many picks and so much at value, I think it gives them a little flexibility on this one. But yeah, Miami with Jimmy Butler and a team that has always been trying to win today. Like, they're not a team that's blowing things up. They're not starting over. They did just sign Jimmy, who's in the same age range as Russ. If they do add Russ to Jimmy in the East, especially if they keep, like, Bam Adebayo, they got a chance to be a top four seed in the East for the next couple of years. Like, that to me makes them a really logical fit to a lot of people around the league, I think, too.
Okay, well, let's talk about the framework of a deal like that. It would have to include Goran Dragic in the last year of his contract, making about $19 million. Presumably, the main value going back to the Thunder is Justice Winslow. Seems like an ideal fit for Oklahoma City, what they've kind of liked. Athlete, can't shoot. Making, I think, about $13 million in the first year of his contract extension. And then you'd probably have to include, because of the fact that they can't add in salary due to that hard cap that Tim mentioned, it'd have to be either Deion Waiters or James Johnson would probably have to be in the trade. And maybe OKC sends back Patrick Patterson to even up a little bit so they're not adding salary. But you talk about that framework, it pretty much necessitates bringing in a third team to take in some of that salary. And there's not a lot of candidates for that left. I mean, nobody has enough money at this point to swallow Dragic into their cap space. Dallas doing a sign-and-trade for DeLon Wright took that possibility off the table. So that, I think, is the biggest challenge they face in negotiating a deal like that.
Yeah, you'd think either Atlanta or Dallas would have to take on one of these pieces. You know, and both of them have the ability still to take a Deion Waiters or an Olynyk or somebody like that into space. They have enough space, but still, then you have to entice them to. Miami's already out picks. Oklahoma City's not going to want to give away picks, probably. You know, makes it tricky to figure out how to do it.
And it depends on what OKC's motivations are. Do they just want to get off this deal? Or are they going to have the luxury of being picky enough to try to identify a development horizon where they're trying to align picks and players and primes, or are they just trying to get off a contract? It's an interesting situation. There's not many teams that are willing to take on the contract or the player. There's not a lot of teams that even could do so. But it's interesting to think about it from OKC's perspective. This is a mammoth moment for that franchise. You know, 4 days ago, they were in a very different mindset. And now they're talking about the future of their entire organization in a different context. I'm curious to think curious to know what you guys think about their primary motivations at this moment. Is it just to get off the deal?
Well, I'm just curious. I mean, this is tangential to your point, but it's also aligned with it in the sense that it's Sam Presti who's going to have to be making this decision after making that major decision already with Paul George. He had a group 2 summers ago where he thought with those two and Steven Adams and a healthy Robertson, we have a chance to win a championship or compete for a championship. And he's also been to the finals with the group that he put together. Yeah. Will he have the stomach to completely break this thing down to the studs on the walls and rebuild it?
Yeah. I think the
why
way
do
the
it
last,
there though? Why do it there? Why not take your last, GM skills and go find another job?
Because I,
but he's done it before. Well, I think that was a more fun part of the job, don't you think?
Yeah,
but Sam, then he's been there so long, you can see that it's really hard to get people to come to Oklahoma City.
Sam likes the challenge of proving people wrong, and he likes the challenge of being in Oklahoma City and winning there. He likes living there. He likes that ownership group. What I would say is Sam over the years has I guess I shouldn't say all that. What I would say is that I think Sam has proven to be somebody that, you know, he's been with that organization, what, 12, 13 years, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you could look at it two ways. I would say, to your point, you could say maybe it's time to go do this somewhere else, or you could say it's like I've gone through the life cycle of this team and I want to do it again, right? And after the trade they just made with the amount of assets that they've got, it's a pretty intriguing job with the amount of resources you have to say, hey, we got Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, a lot of people think could be a really great player in the league. They're going to get something back for Russ. They're going to have all these picks, and they can, you know, maybe turn it back around and do it again.
No, I agree with everything you said. No bones. But I would say one thing that OKC as an organization needs to realize is that one of their most useful assets in the entire organization is Sam himself. And to Dave's point, I kind of agree. Like, this has to be frustrating. I mean, we were sitting here 2 years ago, and he pulled off this incredible mm-hmm. sleight of hand to get the Paul George deal in place and sort of reset this OKC sort of playoff, you know, I'm not calling it a dynasty, but a solid run of yep. OKC basketball. And that was an incredible sleight of hand just a few years ago. And now it seems like he has to hit the reset button again. And I trust Tim. I think he's ready to do it again. But there's got to be part of him that's like, man, not this again.
All right, well, let's talk about the reason that happened. And that's because of the fact that Kawhi Leonard was able to successfully convince Paul George to request a trade out of Oklahoma City a year after re-signing there. This is the talk of the league. We talked about this on our last podcast, but what is everybody hearing from teams about what's the future look like if you can sign a guy to a four-year contract and a year later he's asking for a trade?
Well, one point that's been brought up to me in several different conversations I've had, not just here, but in, you know, because we saw what happened with Kyrie Irving while he was under contract and what happened with Anthony Davis, et cetera, et cetera. The next CBA, this could be a major point of contention. And we've already seen contracts. Like, I did radio with Chris Mullen like a week ago. He signed a 9-year deal with Golden State back in the day. We've already seen contracts shrink down to 5 and 4 being the two maxes. They could cut off or try to cut off another year off it to avoid being in situations.
Wait, don't you think they'd be more likely to go the other way now, that this is kind of an unintended consequence of those shorter contracts?
No, why? Because then you do it with 3 years left on the deal versus 2 years left on the deal. Like, you want to go somewhere else, fine. The longest guaranteed money you can get is 2 or 3 years.
I think that next summer with Giannis Antetokounmpo could be a really defining moment for the league for several years going forward, maybe even for the whole decade going forward, because if he stays in Milwaukee and he agrees to sign a Supermax deal, a lot of these issues will be pushed to the side because arguably the best player in the league going forward is willing to stay in a small market. If Giannis leaves Milwaukee, a team that looks set up to contend for the next half decade, right, no matter what his reasoning is, I think that you're going to have – I think you have the potential for a revolt of some sort from a lot of owners in the league because they're going to look around and say, we don't have any chance with the way the league is set up to be good for any kind of sustained period of time. And we spend all this money on these teams, and we want to at least have a chance to be really good. And, look, it's unprecedented what Kawhi Leonard just did on a variety of levels. He went and he basically got Paul George to go to his team and say, I want to leave. He got the team he wanted to go to trade a billion draft picks and a great young player and a really nice veteran player in Danilo Gallinari, who they could flip for more stuff if they want, all to the Thunder to get him. And he left a team that did everything right, that won the finals with him, that, you know, in theory, any other guy in the past would have just immediately gone back there and like, this is great. I stayed healthy. I like the coach. I like Masai. This is great. I'm going to stay. And he left. And if Toronto can't keep Kawhi and if Milwaukee can't keep Giannis, then I think that could be a real sea change moment for the league where a lot of these teams just go, what is the point?
I mean, I think that's what separates this situation maybe Paul George, I think more so than Kawhi Leonard, because Kawhi didn't ask to be traded to Toronto. And so much of it seems to just be a lifestyle issue. Like, he wants to go back home to Southern California, and free agents, you know, are going to have that right. But the George situation is compared to AD. It was one thing when you could say, look, the Pelicans failed Anthony Davis by not putting a contending team around him.
Sure.
The Thunder, they had their issues. I think their future was looking pretty murky before this trade, but it's not the same sort of thing where they failed Paul George, and that's why he asked out.
No, for sure. I agree. But also, at the same time, you could look at it and say, 3 years ago, Kevin Durant left for nothing.
Right.
And what would Sam Presti rather be? Would he rather have signed Kevin Durant and traded him in a year and gotten back seven draft picks and Danilo Gallinari and Chigo Alexander? Or would he rather have him left for nothing? So I think if you ask Sam, would I rather have had Paul George sign a year ago and ask to be traded or not, I think he would much rather do this. You know, so, I mean, it's a weird situation from that standpoint. But I think if you're the Thunder, it allows you now the flexibility to either keep Russ and pivot or blow it up or do whatever you want.
Yeah, and I think all of that is true. But, Kevin, you asked a great question. Have we entered an era of perpetual free agency for the superstar class? And is that good? I don't pretend to know the answers. I'd also throw in that the Supermax contract needs to be addressed in the next CBA discussion, mm-hmm. too, because it seems not to be having the – talk about intended consequences. That was supposed to fix some of this stuff, and now we're seeing – these contracts either being dodged altogether, or sort of being, now we can't even trade Russell Westbrook because he's on one of them, which is crazy. So I think the CBA and how we look at superstars and asking, is this good or bad for the league, is interesting. Well, I think the small market thing is a big deal. I know small market teams are angry already.
That's why I think Giannis is such a big deal, because I think if he stays, then Adam Silver in the league office can hold it off.
I think it's already lost in the opinion of some small markets, because if you map out where all these guys have just come from and where they've all just gone,
yep.
from New Orleans to Los Angeles, from Cleveland now to Boston to Brooklyn, and to New York City, you can start to see patterns if you want to.
But until we can change those things, or until the people in that make the calls and the CBA can change those things, we're going to have this same environment. There's going to be more superstars that want to get out before their contract's over. What I think we learned was the way Paul George and his representatives handled this, that's the best way to do it. You do it like a thief in the night. You allow the team to go and shop it without people.
Now, Paul George did them a big favor, honestly.
Right, absolutely.
He really did.
Because this is, you know, David Griffin, he was not under contract with the Cavs back in the summer of 2017. He was working on a contract extension, ultimately stepped away from the team. He has said repeatedly that had he had his contract settled, he would have done the first thing when he heard about Kyrie's unrest was, do you want to be here or not? Okay, you don't. I'll find a trade partner. Keep your mouth shut. And he'll have the best chance of success without the diminished asset, because people know that there's desperation behind the trade move.
Trades always go better when you don't know a guy's available, right? When you know that the guy's out there, everybody knows, mm-hmm. the value goes down, makes it harder to make a trade that gives you value back, right? I mean, the Lakers situation with the New Orleans Pelicans worked out pretty well for Griff, but that was an anomaly more than the exception. A lot of times it's like what happened with Kawhi, right? Where, I mean, that was a complicated issue on a variety of levels, but it was kind of like Toronto was kind of the one team that was willing to give up something of real value, even if it wasn't as much value as Kawhi would deserve, because of the situation they were in. They were kind of like, well, this is worth a risk. Even if it's a very low risk, if it had just been like, hey, Kawhi, keep it quiet, we'll find something for you, I think it's more likely than not they would have been able to get something more back.
All right, well, let's ask an important question about who's happy, because we know the small market owners and those front offices are unhappy. Is Adam Silver happy with where the league is right now? Because fan interest has seemingly never been higher.
I don't mean to keep harping on it, but I really think the Giannis thing is huge next summer for this reason. What Adam Silver wants is for the golden goose to keep laying eggs, right? Like you said, the league is in a great place and it's going really well, and there's a ton of interest. Team play, you know, star players in big markets is a good thing for the league. The Lakers being good is good thing for the league. All that is good. However, if two-thirds of the league's owners revolt and there's a lockout a couple years after next summer when the CBA is up, and we maybe lose a season or we lose up half a season because of it, you know, that's where the league really gets in trouble. So I think that's, like, to me, that's what it's going to come down to. I think right now he's happy, but if it leads to that, then it's a disaster.
the golden goose keep laying eggs. It's sustainability, sustained greatness. And there's so much volatility in the player movement stuff right now. I think that's what you have to look at. What is happening right now on a macro trend? And is this good for basketball that all these players can just sort of, you know, contracts may or may not matter to these guys? Is that good? I think that's a real fair question.
Can I turn this conversation more towards the on-court product for a second? Kawhi Leonard had a choice between the Lakers, the Raptors, and the Clippers, and I don't think anyone really saw until the moments before it happened that Paul George was going to end up on the Clippers as well. Did Kawhi make the right decision, Dave, going to the Clippers and not going to the Lakers or staying with the Raptors?
I mean, I'm biased. I wanted to cover him play with AD and LeBron on a nightly basis. So obviously, say he made the wrong decision. That would just would have been incredible to watch. Incredible to cover. So, yeah, made the wrong decision.
But
wrong.
Kawhi, LeBron, Anthony Davis, and then the five of us as the roster. Like, that's
Kyle Kuzma.
And that's it. And then it's just a bunch of scrappy guys.
Yeah, which is okay.
I applaud the decision from a different standpoint, not sort of as a beat reporter, but as somebody who's fascinated by parity and unpredictability in pro sports. And it's been a while since pro basketball has entered a season with this much wide openness. And I love that personally. I know some fans who love the super teams that are happy to switch from their Warriors jersey to a Lakers jersey or whatever. But for me, I think it's a good decision selfishly to pick up on Dave's idea. Yeah. For me, because it's just fun. It's just like, I love the idea that I had no idea is coming out of the East or the West. And if Kawhi had gone to the Lakers, I think some of that parity would have been diminished.
I think the Clippers give him a better chance for sustained long-term success. I mean, LeBron's age is what it is, and obviously you can mitigate that to some extent if you have two superstars, but you're not going to have much depth. You're not going to have much ability to add it without, you
LeBron
know, out several
surgery on both his shoulders this offseason, though.
Yeah, I don't think that's as much of a long-term concern as LeBron's age.
I'm sorry, if Paul George had requested to trade the Lakers and got there, they'd be very quiet on the Dave McMenamin in front of, like, oh, there's surgery on both his shoulders. All of a sudden, he's across the hall, and it's like, well, we got to talk about that.
Well, my point is that, like, he would still have a teaming with Anthony Davis, the best big man in the game.
I think to KP's...
Wait, are we calling Giannis a big man?
Well, I think to KP's point, if you're looking at the situations, I would say the Raptors have been in a pretty exemplary franchise in terms of how they've been run. I would say the Clippers have done a lot of things right the past several years. I would say a lot of people think they're one of the best run franchises in the league. I would say the Lakers on that front have been a very large question mark. I think if you're Kawhi.
That's generous.
I think they get the AD trade done. So if you're Kawhi and you're looking at where can I win for the next several years, I think that trusting in what the Clippers have done and in that front office and that situation being much more stable, I can see why you would choose that path. Now, I do think that we haven't talked enough about the fact that Paul George did have surgery on both shoulders, and he is
yes.
No, just wait a second.
I mean, Montem's agreeing with me.
No,
it's a first on
listen,
the podcast.
I think there's little question that the Clippers have been proven to be a better organization from top to bottom than the Lakers. But I just mean in terms of that specific trade, like, what if Kawhi had gone to the Clippers and said, hey, you know who I want you to get? Bradley Beal, right? A younger guy, a healthier guy. Like, I want you to trade for him instead of a guy who we've already reported and we already knew, and Rona has since reported, like, he's going to miss part of the season already, for sure. Like, she already said he's going to miss, I think, at least a chunk of the beginning of the season in her story the other day.
Oh, I missed that report. I haven't seen that.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I'm going to look that up all around here just to make sure I'm right, but I'm very... pretty certain that she said that in her story the other day.
And one you more point to play it.
Yeah, go ahead.
One more point on that. I think Kawhi wants to go to Los Angeles. Like a lot of human beings, he wants to be around his family and where he grew up. And
which
I think
right.
That took Toronto out of the equation. And Nick Nurse was quoted publicly as saying such. Mm-hmm. I think we can't underestimate that. It's that simple. Now, when it comes down to these other two teams, I think, yeah, you're looking at organizations from the top down that have very different reputations in the last few years. The yeah. Clippers have suddenly become, post-Donald Sterling, sort of a really advanced, progressive, wily front office, or smart, cagey, with Jerry West and Ballmer, and putting together a pretty savvy group. The other thing that we've learned in the last few years is you don't always get a lot of shine for joining another super team. Kevin Durant comes to mind. Kawhi talks to Kevin. Kevin went to Oakland, won two championships, and I don't think got the admiration that he thought he would get doing so. In fact, he was sort of ridiculed and mocked in certain circles for making that choice. And I think he sees the Clippers as a chance to go and do something new on his own terms in his own home city. And I think it was that simple. Better organization, the geography matched up, and the chance to really put his flag down and start something that didn't exist.
I think this is an important point going back to, you know, the small market versus large market issue, you know, flipping the discussion about, you know, the Thunder doing things right as opposed to the Pelicans with Anthony Davis. Conversely, other than the Lakers, you can say that the fact that the Clippers and Nets got free agents and the Knicks didn't is proof that just being in a big market isn't enough. You still have to be well run in a big market unless you're the Lakers.
I want to get back to your point on the better chance for long-term success or whatever. Like, do you agree with the assertion that if he joined the Lakers, he would have won multiple championships?
I think the Lakers would have had a better chance of winning the championship this year with Kawhi than the Clippers do with Kawhi. But I think in future years that would have probably flipped.
Okay, so that's what I'm getting at. Because I think if he was to join the Lakers, he would win multiple championships. And now that he joined the Clippers, I don't know if I can say that. Like, do you think with the Clippers?
Well, let's talk about this. Let's talk about what we think of the tiers of the NBA right now after this move. Do we agree that the Clippers are the favorites? I sense some skepticism on Dave's part.
I like Utah and Denver and Portland just as much as the Clippers.
It's so hard to come out of the West that the plurality of great teams over there makes probably Milwaukee the favorite. Mm-hmm. Not because they're the best team in the NBA, but their path to a championship is much easier than coming out of a world where you've Denver, Houston, LA, and oh, by the way, the Golden State Warriors could be at full strength by March.
It's the old LeBron path to the finals, right? Why would anyone leave the East? Because the West is so much more stacked, and it sort of flipped this year, but you're alleging that it's gone back the other direction.
I think so. I mean, I'm curious to what everybody else
says. You got Philly to look up
for. Well, mathematically, right. Philly and Milwaukee are in their own tier in the East, right? You could say the West has at least four teams in that top tier, and then after that, maybe you can argue for a couple others, but I think, yeah, just from like looking at it that way, you're more likely to get to the finals from the East, so therefore you're more likely to win just because you get there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's as dramatic as it was a few years ago in the East. Like, there's a solid second tier of teams in the East. You know, you've got Boston retooling with Kemba Walker, Indiana getting Victor Oladipo back at some point this season, liked what they did this offseason, adding Malcolm Brogdon, even if it cost them a first-round pick, and Jeremy Lamb. You've got Brooklyn, will see how good they are this year without Kevin Durant. And then Toronto is kind of a question mark when they decide to blow it up this season.
If they just run it back, they'll be a 50-ish win team. They won't. They don't have the same ceiling, but they're going to be pretty good if they keep everybody.
Yeah.
Now, more likely than not, they make some moves, but still, like, Siakam in that core, I mean, they went like 17-4 without Kawhi last year. They at least have a chance to be pretty good. I certainly wouldn't expect them to be
Andrew
back to the
Hahn thinks
Andrew
they're going to be the second best team. Yeah. And Andrew Hahn's take of the year right here. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I just think that Toronto, if I said before free agency started, if the Raptors lost Kawhi Leonard, they would still be the second best team in the East. I don't know if the best team is going to be Milwaukee or Philadelphia, but I'm really high on.
but they'll be one of them will be third.
One of them
the other one will be third. Yeah.
Because Toronto is squared up number two. I'm really high on Siakam's improvements, things like that. So.
But why couldn't they be number one, though?
I just think it's
if
hard.
They're going to be better than Philly or Milwaukee.
I just think it's hard.
It's a hedge of a hot take. Is what it is.
I just think it's hard. I just think it's hard to assume. I just think it's hard to assume that they're going to keep that group together.
It's very hard to assume that. And also, the thing is, they didn't just lose Kawhi. They also lost Danny Green, who was their second best wing player.
Right.
And so far, they've replaced them with Stanley Johnson and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson.
Yeah, not great.
And their wing rotation, their starting wing duo, is now Norman Powell and OG Anunoby. So that's a bit of a drop.
You think that's a drop off?
I do. Much like with the Warriors going from Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, and Andre Iguodala
to D'Angelo Russell.
D'Angelo Russell, Alphonso McKinney, and Glenn Robinson III.
Can I ask one question? So Andre Iguodala is currently with the Memphis Grizzlies, and I think everyone assumes at some point he's either going to get traded or bought out before the season. I have this theory that Andre Iguodala is going to land on one of these title contending teams, and whichever team he ends up going to will end up being the favorite. Agree or disagree?
I agree, and I think there's a easy pathway to see the Clippers trading for him. They have the money. Like they have the money and they have the pieces. They could trade a Harkless.
I think it's more likely the Clippers sign him with their room exception after he takes a buyout.
But I mean, if Memphis is messaging that they have no intention to do that.
I just don't, I guess. I mean, I think even if they have to wait till March, I think
they're going to wait.
I think they'll just wait.
They're going to wait. So the question is, can they get a trade? Can Memphis get something back from one of the other teams? If not, then I think it's probably the Clippers.
Well, I guess my question is more, is Andre Iguodala secretly just, he's the guy that's going to tip the scale for this upcoming
I'm not sure I'd go quite that far. I mean, he's a nice piece, but I don't know if I would look at him and say he's going to be the difference between somebody winning. Like if Andre picks the say the Lakers instead of the Clippers, I don't think that's the difference in a Laker-Clipper series, personally.
How much of an advantage, if Iguodala hits the free agent market, is the fact that his former agent, Rob Pelinka, is now running the Lakers?
You'd have to think that would be a positive.
Yeah. So
can't hurt.
I mean, let's talk about the Lakers roster now. I mean, they've gone out and made 7 signings, I think, since the Kawhi Leonard trade. They used up their cap space, finally made the Anthony Davis trade so that the, like, 8 other trades could happen and some guys could finally play in summer league, including DeAndre Hunter, the number 4 pick. What do we think of this roster that they've assembled?
It's a plan C versus a plan B.
I wish you had the visual. Really wish you had the visual.
It would have been a great. It would have been a great thing if we had a video pod to see Dave's expression.
Just, you know, they played boom or bust, and they busted, and then they had to scramble. I mean, not that they didn't have this in mind that this could have been what was going to happen. You get a nice piece, 32-year-old, and Danny Green, 2-time champion, 40% career from 3, just about. That's a nice, really. That's a great piece. You get a good value on it to Marcus Cousins. You are able to actually have some continuity with such a vast roster turnover in bringing back 3 of the guys from last year in JaVale and Rondo and KCP. You get a savvy vet in Jared Dudley, who's a great locker room guy, who I think they were lacking that type of character last year in their locker room. Even though I had some vets, Rondo is a little prickly compared to a guy like Jared Dudley. Troy Daniels take a flyer on him. And, you know, that's kind of where you stand.
They got shooters.
They got some shooters.
Yeah, I wrote on .com last week that they needed to have a litmus test. Does this guy shoot well? Does this guy play defense well? And the ideal candidates for filling out that roster would check both of those boxes. They got one guy, I argue, who checks both of that, and Danny Green. Mm-hmm. Boogie actually can stretch the floor. I think that's going to be his role there. He was putting up 6 threes a game, I think, in New Orleans. And you know, that's a skill that's really, really important to surround LeBron James with. I think we all know that by now, but Danny and Boogie check that 3-point shooting box. But on the other end of the court, if Boogie doesn't heal from this quad, he's not a great defender. I'm really worried about, can this team become sort of a good 3-point shooting team overall? And a decent defensive team.
Yeah, the defense is really what has me concerned about what their actual ceiling is. Like, you just go down their roster. How many plus defenders do they have? Probably 2, right?
3. LeBron, AD, Danny Green.
I don't think LeBron. You can call LeBron a plus defender anymore at all.
Like, tell that to Andre Iguodala. Yeah.
That was A, that was 3 years ago, and B, I think Dave would also agree that LeBron is very selective in when he chooses to play defense at this point.
I've literally had conversations with members of the coaching staff that they need to account for protecting LeBron on defense regular season.
So like I
Which
said,
made Danny Green so important.
Right. Yeah. And he was a great signing. Like getting him to come in for getting him locked up when there were other options for him on the market. Like to me, if I was Dallas, I would have upped my offer and gotten him, because I thought for Dallas to take another step, getting him would have been really helpful to them. I thought if they were going to give him 3, you know, 3 for 36, which what it sounds like what their offer was, and then
there was some suggestion that not all of that contract was guaranteed.
Well, and that could be true, right? But to me, if I'm them, I would have gone above. I would have done what I needed to get him, because I think it would have helped them a lot. And I thought for the Lakers, that was a huge piece. After that, a lot of these guys are question marks. Like, For sure. Quinn Cook, Rondo, you know, Jared Dudley's a great locker room vet, but he's also a guy that's not, you know, he's a nice bit player on the margins.
JaVale.
You know, DeMarcus coming off the injury, like, what is he actually at this point? It's very hard to know. It's, you know, it's going to be a fascinating mix. They should be very good, assuming their main two stars are healthy. But if either one of them misses any time, you know, they're going to have some issues.
We should also mention Alex Caruso's name at some point in this podcast is also a part of that rotation at point guard.
He's going to play real minutes for them.
I think there are three givens in the Lakers' starting and finishing lineups: LeBron, AD, Danny Green. Who are the other two guys that start, and who are the other two guys that finish?
I think Rondo is starting alongside DeMarcus. That's your starting lineup. In terms of finishing, because of the shooting factor, I mean, Caruso is a name that a lot of people in the organization like, and he showed some strides now, albeit the team wasn't playing. They're out of playoff contention when he had his comeuppance late in the regular season last year, but he has the combination of size, can make free throws, can get the free throw line, and can shoot a little bit that I could see him playing alongside those guys to finish lineups.
And Kuzma in the fifth spot?
Yeah, I could also see Jared Dudley being out there.
Hmm. Possible. I mean, I certainly think, looking at it from my standpoint, I would say the most likely closing lineup is KCP and Danny Green with Kuzma and the other two. Right, the two stars.
I mean, Kuzma's probably going to be the sixth man.
No, that's why I said the closing lineup.
Closing lineup.
Right. Yeah. Like, you have Kuzma out there with LeBron and AD, and then you have Danny Green and KCP, if KCP is decent for them. That, I mean, that to me makes the most sense as your lineup for the path, final 5-6 minutes of the game. You, in theory, have guys who can switch, who can guard. You know, most of those guys can at least give you some threat from the perimeter, give some spacing for LeBron. You can run your, you know, the LeBron AD pick and roll, which in theory should be a pretty nice weapon to have at the end of games. So that makes sense. And yeah, to me, I just think if you're going to sit DeMarcus or JaVale to start games, I would think you're probably going to tell JaVale to chill on the bench. And if he has an issue, it's less of a volatile situation.
And Coach Bontemps wants Kyle Kuzma's 3-point shooting on the court late in the game.
That's why I said most of them. I thought you'd pick up on that.
I don't think we know if this team is done. I mean, I think they'll be really active midseason in different ways. I think it's fun to think about them right now. I think we're going to see multiple iterations. By the way, it's a brand new coaching staff that is unfamiliar with each other, mm-hmm. let alone their own team. I think we're going to see a lot of iterations.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they could even turn, say, KCP and JaVale into Andre Iguodala in January. As an example, right? I mean, those guys make enough money. You could, mm-hmm. or they could flip them for some kind of guy making 15-ish million, right. And then all of a sudden, then you have a fourth guy that you can play out there that you like better, right? Now, they don't have a lot of picks, obviously, at this point to trade, but, you know, they could figure something out. But that's even an option for them, too, as they go through the year to try to maybe, to your point, you know, maybe a Caruso, some Quinn Cook, some of these guys that made a couple $1 million, maybe you package a few of them together, go get a bigger piece, and then you, like you said, hit the buyout market. You try to fill it in around.
And Quinn Cook's a good name to bring up. I think he probably will have a shot to be the starting point guard also.
Quinn Cook.
Quinn Cook's making the most money of any point guard in the league.
Yeah.
And he's going to be a liability on defense too, but he can shoot it. Mm-hmm. And if you're out there with LeBron, you don't necessarily need somebody who needs to handle the ball. You need to be able to shoot it.
I mean, I think, though, to the point, is Iguodala an upgrade in that closing lineup over KCP? Because then you get that same kind of switchability, size, and slightly better shooter, I would say, than KCP.
Well, and he's also a guy that you certainly know what you're going to get from him in a playoff situation if he's healthy. Yep. And he's a guy that's proven on that stage many times before what he is, and, you know, KCP is not.
But he had, 20 points in game 6 of the finals this year?
And game-winning shot in game 2.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean one other name that passed through the Memphis roster, Kyle Korver, what are the chances there? We know that he's going to get waived by the Suns.
How many roster spots do the Lakers have at this point?
They're at 13 right now.
Okay.
So they got two spots. I just don't know if they have any reticence in trying to fill those spots now, or, as Kirk mentioned, give themselves some pliability by keeping an open roster spot or two as they pursue things around the league as the year goes on.
All right, so the other bit of news we've had since we last podcasted on Saturday is that Zion Williamson's summer league is over. He had that knee-to-knee contact during the second quarter of his debut against the Knicks and his former roommate at Duke, R.J. Barrett, on Friday night, left that game, and now, due to a bone bruise in that knee, Pelicans shutting him down for precautionary reasons. What did we see from Zion when he was out there, and is there any concern over the fact that, you know, he's not going to get much time in summer league, or is it just it's summer league?
I mean, I think what we've seen is that both the people advising him and what New Orleans plans to do with him is that they're using kid gloves, and he's such such a big investment in the organization. You don't waste it now, but the catch 22 of that is, you know, I spoke to some people in the Thomas and Mack today that were there and saw him in person. I was just watching on TV, but like, he looks big. Like,
I can confirm.
And you're not gonna, thank you. You're not gonna be able to kind of shed whatever pounds he needs to shed unless you're kind of throwing him out there and removing the governor.
Yeah, I mean, I can't agree more. The biggest threat to Zion's superstardom is his body. I think he is such a rare blend of athletic and size that, like Derrick Rose or some of these players that we've seen just go so fast and so hard with so much weight in his case, I'm worried about it. Like, that's the only thing I think that can hold him back from being a surefire superstar. However, you know, it's unfair to say on one hand a little ding in summer league should be a concern. But if you're one to sort of say, ooh, that's his first real NBA action, we had to pull him out, it is a bit of a red flag.
I also think these teams also do everything they can to not play their guys here as much as they possibly can. And look, Jay Williams left me an interesting point the other day on TV when he was saying, like, when he was drafted high in the draft, you basically don't work out for 6 weeks. You're doing all this stuff. You go, you're in New Orleans, you're trying to buy a house, you're doing, or find a place to live, all this kind of stuff. Then you just show up here like a week and a half later and you got to play, right? And if you are a guy with a body who can get a little bigger, right, it is a situation where if a team is like, hey, you know what, it's probably better if we just have this guy work out the next couple months and get back in shape and be ready to go. I mean, to me, what I saw from Zion was him literally rip the ball out of Kevin Knox's hand like he was a 5-year-old and dunk on his head and then flex on him. And to me, he didn't need to do anything else the summer league after that, because that is why he is the player that he is, right? He is such a unique talent in every facet of the game, from size, strength, speed, athleticism standpoint, that I don't need to see him run around here in Las Vegas. I would have loved to watch him play all week. It would have been great. But they need to make sure he is ready to go in October, not for a couple days here in July.
And a guy who was in a similar situation this time last year, wasn't the number one pick, but was coming off a long season, didn't play in summer league, was Luka Doncic, another person that sometimes can, you know, get maybe a little above his playing weight.
That's correct.
That's a concern. And then he came in and was just electric immediately from day one during his rookie season.
Well, I think that's an interesting question, Kevin. Should these players play in the middle of July in Las Vegas, Nevada at a pretty high level? Let's be honest. If you're coming off a college basketball season, in Luka's case, a long European season, and you're getting ready for your NBA debut, does it make sense from a sports science perspective, let alone sort of a player development perspective, to get in here and get in these intense runs? I think that's a fair question.
As we air all of these games on ESPN, I think the answer is yes, they should all be playing.
Well, and I think there's a difference between these top handful of guys like we're talking about. Zion doesn't have to go hit the workout circuit before the draft.
Right.
Whereas someone who's the 22nd pick in the draft, they've been working out for four or five teams.
Right.
They've been, you know, trying to get in the best shape of their life because this is a job interview for them,
right,
in a different way than it is
and
for Zion.
Guys like that, I think it's really important because you kind of feed their soul a little bit by allowing them to play, and they can see that what they've been doing the last several months where they weren't on a college campus and they were going through the grind with their trainer that was appointed by their agency, or, you know, they were now in their team's stead, that it pays off because now look at how you can apply your new body and your new skill set to these games, and you're able to translate it to, you know, wins and et cetera, and have that, and you take that as your fuel for the next 2 months to get ready for training.
Well, this is a good chance for guys to showcase themselves, right? Even if they're draft picks and, like, on a team for sure, but, like, you know, you kind of get a sense, even though it's a few games, it doesn't always mean anything. Sometimes you see some guys do stuff here that translates. Like, Donovan Mitchell came in here when he was drafted, had a great week or two in summer league. I had, I think, one game where he had like 37 and six steals or something. And people were like, wow, this guy could be pretty good, right? And then that went forward. And, you know, I think it is interesting for teams to see what some of their young players, they put a few guys out there together, what they look like. It's, you know, it's worth it on those, in those aspects. But for a guy like Zion, if there's anything wrong with him at all, there's no reason to push it on any level.
I mean, the player I was thinking of in terms of that example, to bring it full circle, one of those core members of the LA Lakers that we're now assured is going to be in their, well, likely is going to be in their finishing lineup, Kyle Kuzma, 26th pick, comes out here and lights up summer league.
He was great.
He was MVP that year?
I'm not sure.
Josh Hart won at finals, or won MVP at summer
Josh
league
Hart
for sure.
Josh Hart won last year, I think. I think Kuzma won the year before.
Yeah, Lonzo, I don't remember if they won both years in a row or
game.
Not. But.
There you go. That's right.
Yeah, that's, yeah, right. That's right.
Yeah.
So what happens in Vegas does matter. That's what we'll conclude it and watch these games airing on the ESPN family of networks for the next week and beyond, which is slightly longer than I'll be out here and longer than the rest of you will be out here.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're waiting for me to wrap this up. Okay. Kevin, thank you for doing a wonderful job moderating. Dave, thank you for flying out here just to do the podcast.
That's
and
it.
Nothing else.
Only work I have to do.
Kirk, Tim, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
My pleasure.
I'm Brian Windhorst, and we'll see you next week.
Subscribe, rate, and review.